This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And welcome to Detours here on Joy 94.9. I'm Jody, joined by Greg, and a happy Saturday and fantastic tribute for Saturday Magazine this morning with a really interesting forum.
Isn't it fantastic? Fantastic ways of Joy connecting to the community. And congratulations to Doug Pollard and his team, all the tech people at Joy. And also congratulations to Matt, our newsreader. Fantastic news reading here at Joy 94.9.
And of course, this is the Detours Travel Show here on Joy. We're with you right up to 1 o'clock. The time now is 6 minutes past 12. And we've got to introduce our very special guest in just a few minutes. But of course, being a travel show, we always like to talk about our own travel plans. And I'd like to share mine. Where do you think I'm off to?
Oh, no.
Go on.
India?
No, surprisingly not. No, I'm actually heading off to Oman on Monday.
Oman?
In the Middle East.
Digging up oil, you know,
No, actually, I'm going to be super nanny. A friend of mine has asked me to come and look after her children while she and her husband go to the US for some sort of health reasons. So here I am going to be arriving with my little bag of tricks. Hopefully those kids are going to be well behaved because I don't have my own. So I'll be ringing my friends for advice, perhaps.
Where have you been? Where are you planning? Jody's off to Oman. Where are you planning to go? Let us know, 0427 569 949. That's 0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au. Well, I've got no immediate plans, Jodes, but I do notice during the week when there was that tsunami warning with the Aceh earthquake off Indonesia, Facebook popped up a whole range of people from my contacts who happened to be in various parts of the world potentially impacted by what might have been a tsunami. And I had all these various people saying I'm on top of a building and posting pictures of running up a road, and they're all in the same place, and I was able to connect the dots.
Oh, I love that.
And I had a group of seven of my friends that didn't know each other who managed to find the same car park elevated above the potential tsunami line and met all these new buddies.
How gorgeous. How's so you reunited them for safety but also friendship.
That's right. So, look, thank you, Facebook. Thank you for reuniting travellers and connecting people. And I think that's what we do as well. You can also check out Detours on Facebook and on Twitter as well. So check us out.
Now, the week before, we talked about wanting to have more team members for the Detours show. And we've had such an overwhelming expressions of interest of people who are talented and amazing, interesting skills and things to offer, and we'll be looking through those applications in the next couple of days and we'll get back to you. So thank you. We look forward to meeting you all.
And there are plenty of other ways to volunteer at Joy 94.9. Check out the website, joy.org.au. Look at volunteer opportunities and become a part of our team and family.
That's absolutely right. You're very welcome. Now, we'd like to also welcome someone who's very special, who are joining us here today, Sarah Barton, who's a documentary filmmaker, a Churchill Fellow, part-time CEO of Grip Media, and a mum. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thanks, Jodie. Thanks, Greg.
Oh, brilliant. It's so good to have you here. Churchill Fellowship is an amazing experience to have in your collection of life experiences.
It is an amazing experience. It's when you're successful with a Churchill Fellowship, they say it will change your life. And I've got to say, when people said that to me, I was thinking, I hope that means for the better, because, you know, life-changing things aren't always for the better. But it certainly was. But sometimes the change happens in very unexpected ways. So I initially did my Churchill Fellowship as a travel opportunity to go and research for a documentary I wanted to make. But I think the spin-offs of doing a fellowship and being a Churchill Fellow are kind of diverse and in some ways quite unexpected. It's just a really nice, I guess, mid-career opportunity to just sort of lift your experience and your profile a little, and to travel too, because, you know, being a mum and a documentary maker, it's like I don't have loads of cash to splash around, like, you know, travelling. So it was a great opportunity to go away for 8 weeks and have someone else pay for it.
Absolutely.
But I did work really, really hard while I was away.
I can imagine, Sarah. I know a couple of people who've been fortunate to be selected as Churchill Fellows. One gentleman who went to – the US to have a look at different attractions, tourism attractions, and about accessibility. And I said, you're just wanting to go to Disneyland. You're just using that as an excuse. But in fact, there are a lot of responsibilities that go along with having the Churchill Fellowship, writing up a report. And you actually had a blog.
Well, I love blogging when I'm travelling, especially if I'm travelling alone, because I'm used to being surrounded by family all the time and friends. And so I was travelling on my own and I sort of wanted company. So I kind of, the blog was my company. And quite often I would spend an hour or an hour and a half writing up a blog piece with photos and, you know, sometimes little videos and things like that. And the blog's about all kinds of aspects of the journey, not just the people I met. Obviously, there's an element of the work and the research I was doing, but there's also food, restaurants, meals I ate, places I went, hotels, you know, like all of that sort of fun stuff that goes with travelling. And I love sort of bringing all of those things in together to make a whole sort of journey rather than just focusing on one sort of aspect of the trip.
How wonderful. Is that an organic intermeshing of your experiences while you travel, or do you sit down and plan it out roughly? Or
It's just me. It's just how I am. I mean, I like, you know, if people who know me professionally probably know quite a bit about my so-called personal life, I guess, because they're all part of who you are. And I think it's very hard to sort of separate those things. And, you know, people, I mean, I'm a documentary maker, I've got a real interest in disability rights, but I also love food and I love fashion and I love all kinds of other things. And I think all of those things go in together to make you who you are. And they make me different from the next documentary filmmaker who may not be quite so interested in fashion.
Or quite so interesting.
Oh, thank you.
So let's go back a step before we talk about the Churchill Fellowship and where you went and what you discovered and what you experienced. But you're a documentary filmmaker. How did you get into this as a career?
Well, I started off all my childhood, all my teenage years, all I wanted to be was a fashion designer. So I went and I did that. And in the 80s, I worked for Trent Nathan and I was kind of, you know, frightfully enamoured with the fashion industry. But by the time I got to my mid-20s, I found that it really wasn't satisfying enough, and I also wasn't well qualified to kind of rise up and have a proper career path. So I decided I needed to do some study, went to Monash University, did a BA, majored in cinema studies, went to VCA, and then I always really wanted to make drama. I wanted to make feature films and TV drama. And I started off doing TV commercials, and then I saw an ad. This is like one of those career crazy things that would never, never happen now. But I saw an ad in Encore magazine, which was the trade magazine, still is, but there are others now, from SBS saying, looking for documentary ideas. And I kind of went, I've got an idea for a documentary. I'd actually offered this idea to another friend of mine who was at film school and thinking she might like to make a documentary. And then she went, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And it was a documentary about sexuality and disability. So I wrote up what I now look at as an appalling 7-page proposal. It was just like really like underdeveloped and just dreadful. Put it into SBS, forgot about it. 3 months later, I got a phone call saying, we'd like to commission your film. Now that so does never happen. Now this was 1994, I think. And so the film was basically commissioned. We had to go and develop the story a little bit more. And anyway, the film was made. It was a total winner of an idea. Sex, disability, no one had done it really before. And so I made the film Untold Desires, and it won the first ever Logie for SBS. It won a lot of an AFI award, a lot of other awards. And from that moment on, I was a documentary filmmaker. And no one could comprehend of the idea that I might want to do anything else other than documentaries. So I kind of ended up there by default. And I guess the kind of social justice side of the films I make actually does appeal to me and who I am, but I still harbour that fantasy of maybe making a feature one day.
Now, with that first film, you came in with a passion. What was the changing experience going through the process of producing that first documentary for you?
Oh, it was terrifying. Absolutely terrifying, because I, you know, here I was virtually fresh out of film school. I'd been given a commission to make a film for SBS, and you know, all I could think of the whole time was, I know nothing, you know, like, and it was the scare. I was like terrified through the entire process, and somehow I managed to fluke, you know, a reasonable film. I mean, it's still seen. It's a good film.
I haven't seen the film, but more than reasonable if you're winning Logies and AFI awards. I mean, you know, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
for your first documentary.
Yeah, it was.
Sarah.
It's been downhill ever since. But
you know what? We always hit up our guests for a little bit of music, a bit of passion, and there's a lot of passion in your work. our first track is something that you've chosen. Tell us about this.
Look, I grabbed a couple of CDs that were relevant to my Churchill Fellowship because when I arrived, I flew out of Melbourne, flew to Heathrow, hadn't really planned things as well as I probably should have, didn't really have any idea how far the drive from Heathrow to Lancaster is. So having flown for 28 hours or however long it takes, gone and grabbed a hire car out of the yard at Heathrow and kind of pointed my car in the direction north, I'd driven for a few hours and I was starting to feel really tired and needed a lot of coffee. It was morning, thank goodness, but like, psych. And then I kind of realised that it's actually about a five-hour drive and I didn't think you could drive for 5 hours anywhere in England. And so I really, really needed some music to keep me awake along with the coffee. So I pulled into a petrol station and I went, what can I get that's going to be upbeat and keep me awake and keep me driving? And I picked up a triple CD of funk classics and this is one of them.
Sarah Barton here on Detours with Jody and Greg. Stay with us.
Never ever turning your love away, okay. Even though I know it's belonging to another man.
Oh, baby.
You know when you look in my eyes,
yeah.
I'm gonna say these words.
Girl, you're welcome. Stop on.
You are on Detours with Jody and Greg and our guest Sarah Barton, documentary filmmaker extraordinaire, Logie winner, AFI winner, Churchill Fellow and part-time CEO of Grip Media.
And we're on the show with you right up till 1 o'clock here on Joy. I'm Jody, joined by Greg and our special guest Sarah Barton. And now, Sarah, you chose to undertake apply for a Churchill Fellow. And as far as I'm aware, it's a very competitive process, very sought after. What was it that you were trying to achieve through the study tour?
I could be shallow and just say I really wanted to get out of the house. I really did want to travel. I just felt like I really needed to sort of get out of Australia, really. But I had a project that I was having trouble funding through traditional methods and felt that I had to go outside of that and look creatively at where I could get the money for it. And a Churchill Fellowship, its value is approximately $25,000, but it's all in travel. You don't actually get any cash. Or you do get cash to spend on, you know, hotels, which of course I spent on the best hotels I could afford. It was a way of me doing some research. And so what I did was I took my camera kit, my tripod, my lighting kit, by myself with my luggage, and I did say I was interested in fashion, so I don't travel light, and I travelled with all of that gear and I filmed interviews while I was there, and I also recorded some archival references. I went to a couple of libraries and collections and looked into their archives. So, and I was basically interviewing disability rights activists in the UK and in America, so I was looking into the history of the disability rights movement, and I wanted to go back to sort of the beginnings of the social model of disability, as they call it in the UK, which was that sort of separating out disability, the social experience of, you know, being disabled by society, as opposed to disability as a medical condition that people suffer from, you know, in inverted commas. So I was interested in that sort of origin, and that led me to interview quite a few people there were a handful of people who died shortly before I got there. So it's at that point where people are starting to get old and you really do need to kind of capture those interviews. But there were younger people as well. And so I did about 26 recorded interviews with various different activists in England and America.
How did you pitch the discussion with them before you've got your concept, you've made contact with them? How do you pitch it where it's such an invasive view into their world and the impacts on their lives?
Look, I think for these activists, these were people who'd been politically active in the disability rights movement for many decades. So it was less about their sort of personal experiences. I was more interested in a political sort of story and about activism and issues. There's an awful lot of material around disability that is about the personal experience. And to be fair, that is very powerful and it does help audiences to understand it. But I wanted to go a step beyond that and look at it as in a sort of political context. And I feel with this project for me has been going on for a long time, and I almost feel like people are not ready for that. They're still in that kind of personal experience space with disability, and I just really wanted to move the discourse a step further. But I find I'm actually quite struggling with broadcasters and that to get them to sort of get it, and, you know, to the point where it's like, is it me? Am I just completely like not getting it? So it's been a tricky kind of project to move forward with, but you know, it's still moving.
It's clearly moved you too, Sarah, hasn't it? I mean, what part of this detour changed you?
Ooh, that's actually quite a hard question to answer, because I don't know. Apart from sort of just general growth, you know, an experience like that is really enriching, and, you know, growing. You know, you travel, you meet amazing people, and so it's certainly made me much more aware of the sort of social model, disability from a rights perspective. So I think in my day-to-day work, I work much more sharply, I'm much more sharply focused, and, you know, there's that's a kind of really important thing that's happened for me through the Churchill Fellowship. And yeah, I don't think that would have happened without travelling and without meeting all of these people. But I also have to live down the fact that my family missed their flight home from Paris, and it cost lots of thousands of dollars for them to get home. So, you know.
What happened there?
Yeah, we need to understand this. Come on, share it. There's only lots of thousands of people listening.
Well,
all
it is a travel
show,
so I feel like, you know, it's a story that needs to be told. So I went off on my Churchill Fellowship. I had 2 weeks in England. My family came and met me in England. We had a week in England, 2 weeks off in France, and then they were flying home and I flew on to New York. So we were in Paris. I was waiting to travel to New York and they were waiting to travel back to Melbourne. And I had organised most of it, but handed all of the paperwork for the rest of the family over to my husband, who traditionally is not the cruise director in our household. But, you know, I thought that because it was his flights and whatever, he could manage that. But I had it in my mind that he was flying on, for instance, the Friday. I just had it in my mind, but there had been some to-ing and fro-ing. Anyway, when I hadn't looked at his tickets for a while, and the day before he was due to fly out, I said, look, show me your tickets. I just want to make sure we've booked the taxi early enough. Da, da, da. And I looked at the ticket and I went, oh, that flight leaves in half an hour.
Oh, no. That would have to be my worst nightmare.
It's for one adult and two children, you know, so it's not just one person's flight. It's three people's flight. That flight leaves in 1 hour. So I spent 5 hours trying to actually get them on the flight, but that was kind of daft. And then trying to kind of, Qantas needed another 7 days to fit them all on and another $1,500. And everyone's like, oh, 7 days extra in Paris, how wonderful. No. It doesn't matter where you are. When you want to go home, you want to go home.
But also if you're on a budget, because this sounds
totally.
a big trip for a family to come, and you're obviously having a lot of investment in your own travels for the Churchill Fellowship, but, you know, that doesn't come cheap.
Yeah. No, it was expensive. And the look on Greg's face. And so eventually we found out that the most expedient and efficient way of dealing with it was to buy 3 new tickets, just ditch the Qantas return flights, 3 new tickets, $3,000, 1 extra night in the apartment, which thankfully it was available and the owner was happy to take it out of our bond that we'd put in. And it was so by $3,000 plus for them to all get home, and then they had some hideous 8-hour layover in somewhere in the Middle East, and my daughter has a disability and they didn't have a wheelchair, and by all accounts it was hideous, but I was in New York by then.
Oh, it might have been Oman. We can find out from Jodie.
No, it wasn't
like
Oman.
Oh, geez.
So that's on a personal level, that was kind of, you know, a big disaster which I will never ever live down, because it was all my fault.
And if you've missed a flight, we'd love to hear from you, because we love the gruesome stories as well. You can email us on air@joy.org.au or you can SMS us at 0427JOY949. We always love to hear your stories, whether they're good, bad or indifferent. But of course, if you've just joined the program, this is Detours. We're speaking with Sarah Barton, who's a documentary filmmaker, Churchill Fellow, part-time CEO of Grip Media and a mum. And we're talking about her trip to the UK and to the US. So maybe we'll move to the US now that you've connected us with New York. What were you doing in New York?
Well, New York was a fairly enticing destination, so I had to find some activists that I needed to interview there.
So it was the destination first.
Well, there's a little bit of that goes on, you know.
Yeah, I must admit that I did a study tour and I did pick some places
you
I did want to
you
see.
You know, you just... you know, I just really wanted to go back to New York. So but I found some great people in New York and got some really interesting insights. I interviewed a woman called Nadina Laspina. She's an academic and she gave me a great interview and I nearly burnt my hotel room down with a new light that I kind of burnt. And when I'd finished the interview, the room was full of smoke and it was just like, this can't be right. So I opened the window and checked out. And I also met a fantastic historian, a guy called Warren Shaw, whose parents were disability rights activists. He didn't have a disability himself, but he'd grown up with activists and his stories were great. And then I caught the train to Philadelphia where I met Johnny Crescendo, who you had in as a guest, and he was just fabulous. And then travelled to Washington. And things fell over a little bit in Washington. I had a bit more time than I needed because interviews that I thought I'd lined up didn't happen. And Judy Heumann, who was, you know, the big star that I really wanted to meet, was getting on a plane to Africa and I couldn't catch her. And so I did a bit of, you know, fiddling around in Washington. And then I went to Texas. I went to Austin and interviewed Bob Kafka and Stephanie Thomas, and then travelled up to San Francisco, did lots of work in just out of San Francisco in Berkeley, where the independent living movement arguably started. It was like I'd done the whole journey backwards. Mm. So for me, in my mind, although in fact once I'd done the interviews, I realised that there was more to it. But in my mind, the last place I was at was the place where the whole story started. So if I could have done it the other way around.
When you hop from place to place and these interesting people right across the states, were there any local differences they had in their life experiences with disability?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Well, particularly in America because of the states, because they're in different states. And the thing that I learnt about travelling in America is that the culture, it's very diverse. I mean, life in New York and New Yorkers are very different from Texans and they're very different from Californians. And although they all speak English, culturally, I found them very, very different. And I found the country very diverse and very, very interesting. They have a whole range of state-based, I mean, you know, our disability services are often state-administered and they are in America too, but there's many, many more states and they can't get them all to agree. Like in Australia, we're looking at a national disability insurance scheme. That's out of the question in America because the diversity of states' interests and some of the states provide much better services than others. So, yes, the experiences were very diverse and I was very interested in how the political and the kind of structural infrastructure impacted on people's lives. And it certainly does. And that's one of the things I want to sort of flesh out in my documentary.
Fantastic. Did you experience, you know, the life and culture from different perspectives from the States? Did you perhaps have a funky drop or two?
Oh, I tried to. I had a really lovely experience that's totally unrelated to my work in Austin in Texas. I had one of those days where I was sort of Austin's got its charm, but it's also Texas and it's got its vast kind of lack of charm as well. And I was kind of wandering. I wandered down to South Central. I think that's the street where there's all the groovy shops there. And it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I was really hungry for a meal, like you always are when you're in strange cities at weird times of the day. So I went into this little cafe, had a meal, and the waiter was Texan, but he'd done a school exchange in Brisbane as a teenager, and he was a total Australiaphile. And he was quite a sweet guy, and he said, look, I'm about to knock off. Could I show you around Austin? And I just took one look at him and went, yeah, sure. Like, you know, that'll be fine. So we spent like 3 or 4 very pleasant hours of, you know, driving around in his kind of clapped out car while he showed me the sights of Austin, which was just delightful.
And you brought back some music for us as well, Funky Drop as well.
Yeah.
Here we are on Joy 94.9, Jody and Greg with Sarah Barton.
Listen to Joy when you want, where you want, with the Joy app. Download it for free at joy.org.au.
And you're listening to Detours here on Joy 94.9. It's 24 minutes to one. I'm Jody, joined by Greg with our special guest, Sarah Barton. And that great track was called Funky Drop before. Now, before we were talking about disability and the work that and the passion that Sarah has about disability advocacy and rights. And of course, the National Disability Insurance Scheme is in fact an opportunity for Australia to create a better quality of life for hundreds of thousands of people in the community who have disabilities. And on the 30th of April, there are rallies in major capital cities around Australia. And I really encourage you to get onto the everyaustraliancounts.com.au website, sign up as a supporter, go along to the rally and see what you can do to make a difference.
And many in our Gowan Lisbon community live with disability, but many more as well work in the field and work with people and make their lives a little bit different.
I've got to say, when I was travelling in America, I talked to them about this proposal for a national disability insurance scheme, and just about everyone was pretty envious of the possibility that it offered in terms of being able to support people better. But also, they were very cautionary about the fact that it's not the complete answer and that there's a lot of rights work that also goes alongside of that. And I guess the film that I'm wanting to make is about augmenting that idea of extra support, but also about putting it onto everyone in our society about being more inclusive and how that travels through every kind of aspect of how we live our lives.
I think that's terrific. And so where are you at with in terms of making this documentary film?
Oh, well, I've done a preliminary... I've lost for words for once. We've made a preliminary website, which is got a little bit of blogging on it, which is at weirdandwonderful.net. And it sort of gives you a little bit of a teaser for some stories and some of the way that we want to deal with the interviews that I did on my Churchill Fellowship. We're also proposing to make a documentary, a straight, you know, linear TV style documentary. And at the moment we're deep in the midst of raising funds for the whole project. So we've sort of stopped rewriting it. I've rewritten it about 6 million times. That was last year and the year before and the year before. It's, you know, it's time to get the money and get the thing made and frankly, and move on.
Well, it sounds like there's very important stories to be told. And that's the important message.
Well, that's why
it?
I've stuck with it for so long. Yeah, I do feel like it's a really important work for me. But, I mean, the odds of trying to get it made has been one of the hardest things I've ever done. And if I can make this and make it good, it will be like climbing Mount Everest in terms of, you know, getting it done. It's been really hard.
And we'll watch you with joy as you walk up to get that AFI award at the end of the tree.
Now, before we were talking about missing flights and Sarah was sharing with her husband and two kids who... missed their flight from Paris back to Melbourne. And we've had an email from Peter Stevenson, one of our regular listeners here on Detours, who says he hasn't missed a flight, but he turned up to Lang Po Bang Airport for a flight to Ho Chi Minh, only to find the airport locked up, which was about 7:30 a.m. And no one turned up until after 9 a.m. The flight was supposed to be at 9:30, but apparently had been cancelled some days before. And the airline had tried to contact him by email, but he didn't have access. And he had no idea that the flight was cancelled. They then put on a later flight, which would mean we'd be missing the next connection to the next destination. It cost over $1,000 US each for his partner and himself to get another later flight to Hanoi, and that meant they were travelling for about 15 hours, which should have been 3. Lots of stress, and we finally got there and it all ended well. Oh gosh, thanks Peter for sharing. What an awful story.
And that's what travel insurance is for, isn't it?
I've got to tell you, it doesn't cover you if you miss your flight. No travel insurance for, whoops, I didn't make that flight. But can I tell you also that the airline we rebooked on sent us numerous texts, emails reminding us, Qantas, there was deafening silence. They don't remind you about anything, which, you know, a reminder would have actually helped on that occasion.
Well, actually, I was reading on a blog last night about in India, there's a new way of getting your visas upon arrival, which they've been piloting. And it's been a disaster because people haven't been at the check-in counter when you go to get the visa and people having to wait at the airport. And then you have to have the right currency. So you've got to muck around and get, you know, currency exchanged. And it simply hasn't been working. But I had an experience going from a domestic airport to an international airport in India, and I had an e-ticket and they wanted me to print it out. And I said, dude, the whole idea of an e-ticket is it's electronic. Why am I going to print it? And they wouldn't let me board the shuttle bus. So now I print everything out.
lessons.
Yeah, including the tickets. So the Churchill Fellowship, you applied for, you were successful in achieving. It's a very rigorous process from what I understand, that there's interviews.
There's quite a few interviews, yeah. And the last one, you know, I was really nervous, but then I went, you know, like once you get over that first sentence, it's something happens in my brain where it just goes and the mouth starts working and everything sort of lines up. But the waiting around for the interview, I get shockingly nervous.
So how do they interview for a Churchill Fellowship?
They have panels. There's a sort of there are thematic panels. So there's science and medicine and social issues and that sort of thing. So you get interviewed by those panels, and then each of those committees puts forward, you know, their nominees to the state level, and then you get interviewed at a state level by, you know, one panel that's going to choose whoever they nominate. And then if you get through that level, it does go to a national level, but that's not another interview. That just sort of seems to happen mysteriously. I think it's almost automatic, but there is a further review. So, but it's wonderful. Once you're accepted, it's, you know, you're treated, you know, we had to go to Government House to get our awards, and it's a frightfully sort of formal and prestigious thing, and it's a lot of fun.
And from what I understand as well, people who've applied, some people do it at the last minute and sort of run around trying to get letters of support and referees, and it's quite hectic. And others use the information on the website as a guide. So, in fact, on the website for churchilltrust.com.au, the key dates, the 2013 applications open from the 1st of November this year, and they close the 28th of Feb next year. And that's for travel between the 1st of September 2013 and the 31st of August 2014. So I would suggest, probably, if you're really going to go for it, give it a bit more time and
plan
ahead.
Yeah, I think you need to plan ahead and really think about who your referees are going to be. And it's also really useful to have a mentor through the process. I had a friend who had been is a Churchill Fellow from an earlier year, and he really coached me and talked to me about this, you know, helped with the emphasis of, you know, what they were going to interview about. And that was after I got through the first, because he actually was in the first interview, and it's like, oh my goodness, I know this man, you know. And then it was beyond his control, but he actually really coached me. And also the panel that is in your area, they have a real interest in getting your nomination up if they select you. So it is very supportive, but it's quite rigorous.
Now, that voice is Sarah Barton, documentary filmmaker and Churchill Fellow, and you're on Detours. Look, we want one more piece of music, haven't we? House Party. Tell us about this bit of music.
Oh, well, this was the most immediately accessible from the triple CD pack that I bought at the Roadhouse. I thought in England this was a pretty good... I don't know how you'd go in Wodonga picking up, you know, a triple CD pack of funky, you know, sort of music to listen to, but it kept me awake when I needed to stay awake.
And that's important. Stay with us till 1 o'clock here on Detours 94.9.
Joy.
Joy.
94.9.
Joy has filled the front cabinet chock-a-block with quality local-produced chocolates for you to sink your teeth into while supporting Australia's gay and lesbian radio station. Drop into Joy and pick up yummy dark and milk chocolate, apricots, mangoes and grapes. Plus, you can choose from chili choc, wattle seed and wild peach-coated macadamias. Curious? Well, drop into the Joy studios and buy some today's. They're great value, unique and a great Joy fundraiser.
You're on Detours. That dulcet tone of was Jodie Wilmot. You can't see this, folks, but in a radio studio, when someone gets the giggles, they cover their face so people can't see them, and it's fantastic.
Which is just what I did.
Now, speaking of something food, because, you know, we had chocolates and talking about that, we've got Pete Dillon here from Cravings coming up at 1 o'clock.
You're very easy to listen to on the radio.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. And the world's biggest smile, if only you could see it. Today I'm starting off at something that's going to happen reasonably frequently now on the show, which is an ethical discussion around food. I talk a lot about the provenance of food, where it comes from, how it's grown. So we're going to look at the ethics behind
ethics
it.
Ethics and food.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people making decisions around food that are ethical rather than just about organics or sustainability. So I've got two guys here from Charcoal Lane, which is a social enterprise. Kelly Donati from Slow Food will also be in, and we're going to chat to Matt Wilkinson, who's just been at the Slow Food Market at Abbotsford Convent, just about choosing the right things in the right season. He is Mr. Vegetable. So that's the first of probably...
Well, stay with us.
The next, you know, one, maybe one a month, where we talk about the ethics of the way we eat.
In 9 minutes on Cravings. Coming up on the hour, on Detours, after Detours, on Joy 94.9. That's Pete Dillon. Every time he comes in to do the promo, my mouth starts...
I get hungry. Yes. Yeah. Yes, me too.
That's because it's lunchtime.
And that
that's
voice true. Is Sarah Barton. Sarah Barton is our guest. She's a documentary filmmaker. And you're also part-time CEO of Grit Media.
I am.
What's Grit Media?
Well, Grit Media is a not-for-profit organisation that promotes people with disabilities in the media. We create the Channel 31 program No Limits, which I started way back in 2003.
Oh, with a good friend of ours, George was there, George Telepris.
Yes.
Stella Young. John McKenna.
Yes. Fantastic. So we all started off in 2003 making Grit Media, making No Limits rather. I produced the first 70 episodes between 2003 and 2005. And then, and I was also involved in setting up the organisation. And then I left for a while. And then late last year, I was asked, would I come back? Things had kind of got to a little bit of a difficult phase. I think it's difficult for a lot of not-for-profits, and they were just looking for some fresh energy, and a friend of mine was seconded onto the board, and he suggested that I might like to go back and, you know, sort of see if we can pull it out of what was some pretty, you know, tricky situation financially. So I've been doing that, and it is slowly, you know, rising again like a Leviathan. but we're planning to do another series of No Limits this year. And we're also looking, we want to develop a sitcom around disability. So we're just going to get to work on that in the next month or so, and just have a little bit of fun. I just really want to push the boundaries about what you can talk about. It's very much like what I was talking about earlier, just getting disability into a totally different paradigm, so people aren't sort of thinking, oh, woe is me.
And there's a lot of connections and synergy, obviously, with Joy, because that's what we do, is push the boundaries of gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender and intersex communities and attitudes about inclusion and about discrimination and just being part of the community and contributing. And Grit Media, of course, is a tenant here in City Village, which is at 225 Bourke Street, which is an initiative of the City of Melbourne on level 6, and Joy's, of course, on level 9. And talk us through the team that you have at Grit Media. Is it mainly volunteers?
We've got quite a lot of volunteers, but we also do try... Well, I'm a big believer in paying people when we can. So we do. We have a little fee-for-service area where organisations like Scope, or, you know, we've just done a job for the City of Moreland, you know, they'll come to us with a little budget and they want to make a particular project. So we certainly pay people to do that work. So we're always on the lookout for people with disabilities who have some skills and you know, ability to work on projects. We're at the moment really looking for people with a funny bone, sense of comedy, possibility of writing, but we try and support people to be the best they can be. So it is about not just about setting them out, pushing them out to sea and saying, here, you're a person with disability, go and write a comedy. It's actually about nurturing those ideas and that talent and sort of bolstering it so that they can look and be the best they can be. I'm a big believer in that because I think there's a sort of an instinct, just like, oh, it's got to be all done by people with disabilities. But in actual fact, there's no... That a lot of people haven't had the training, they haven't had the opportunities, and they need the support. So that's what we do. We support people to do fabulous work.
And you move around and do it out there where people live, don't you? So you get out and about. And,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we're all over the place.
I'm really keen to know, how did it start? Who founded Grit Media? Where was the origin?
Well, I actually started it.
Now, I knew that was... I thought that was going to come because you're such a dynamo about getting an idea, like an embryo, and making sure it not just grows up to be a full adult idea, but it's actually going to be spawning itself all over the place.
I didn't do it alone. We were all making No Limits, and we'd made a lot of episodes of No Limits. And I've got to always give credit to Greg D, who's been a bit of a mentor for me along the way. He's always thought of me for projects, because we get along very well together. And he was the station manager at Channel 31. So he stepped into the job there and looked at their charter and went, well, we're not doing this. We're not doing a disability show. We've got to do a disability show. So he came to me and he said, Sarah, you've got to do it. And I went, no. He said, yeah, you've got to do it. And so we got No Limits up. And then Greg and I kept talking and he said, really, you need an organisation behind it. So that was when we started. What we started with was an organisation called Disability Media. And then after I left, very soon after, it was changed to Grit Media. But basically, we went through the whole process of establishing a not-for-profit. So I've still got all the files from the, you know, lawyers and the tax, you know, blah, 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 that boring stuff that we did. So, but, you know, there were other people involved. It wasn't just me, but Greg certainly often was he would push me to new and say, go on, you got to do it. But I did it. he'd just tell me what to do.
But you're right, though. It is a tough world for not-for-profits from a fundraising perspective, from meeting demands in the community of unmet need or people who are vulnerable, experiencing disadvantage, right through to, you know, the governance issues and making sure that things are done transparently and accountably. I do this as my full-time job, running a not-for-profit. I love it. It's very rewarding, but it's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I've only hired 2 days a week at the moment. So, you know, we'll hopefully over a few years, we'll build that up to, you know, a few more days a week. But it's part time. I just do as much as I can and, you know, try and make it viable. And also just to sell the message of the organisation, because I think that the power of having people with disabilities seen and heard in the media is a very powerful force for inclusion. And it might not be direct service delivery, but I think it's delivering something that's really important.
Terrific. Thank you, Sarah, so much for joining us here on Joy 94.9 Detours. If you want more information, you can go to Sarah's website, fertilefilms.com.au. There's a bunch of links there to the Churchill Fellowship. And of course, if you want info about Grit Media, gritmedia.org.au.
That's right.
Stay with us. We've got Cravings coming up at 1 o'clock, and we'll be back again on Saturday at 12. In fact, I won't be. I'll be in Amman, but
see you next week. Enjoy Amman. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Jodie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Miss any of your favourite shows? Check out our podcast on the Joy website, joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.